This week on Hoops But Edgy, Jim talks about the James Harden debacle, as well as Giannis's new contract, and more. Welcome back to another episode of Hoops But Edgy, the only hoops podcast that assigns itself a completely extraneous theme just because I don't want to censor myself and I occasionally swear. The way this show works is that I answer 5 questions every week talking about the current NBA season. And so if you have any questions you want me to answer, make sure to tweet them at me at Jim Wears Shirts. But with no further ado, we've got some preseason stuff to talk about, a little more drama. So let's get into it. Question 1. Where should James Harden go? Okay, so if you're not up to date with the James Harden situation, basically, he says that he wants to get traded out of Houston. He doesn't show up to training camp. He goes to the club instead with no mask. He and PJ Tucker finally show up. They look like they don't want to be there. And now he says he wants to get traded to the Nets or the 76ers. But recently, this has been expanded, and the Rockets have started taking calls from other teams. So, most people say that he should go to the Nets, 76ers, or Heat. And people have their own arguments for each of these. And on the surface, these options all make sense. James Harden wants to go to a contender, and of course he should. Someone who's not a contender shouldn't bother trading for him. I mean, he's at the top of his game right now. He's a 30-year-old former MVP, right? If you're rebuilding, you're not going to bother trading for him. His timeline isn't the same as, like, you know, if you bring him to the Kings, it's pointless. You know, De'Aaron Fox isn't ready to compete. He's still got to grow into his talents, right? Just as an example. So the problem is that the contender needs to be able to satisfy the trade demands of the Rockets, which is they want some sort of all-NBA level player plus more assets. And so how many teams truly fit both of these? Well, yes, the Nets, 76ers, and Heat could all provide a good package for Harden. The question is, should they? Okay, the Nets have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, and those are two guys who need the ball. A lot of people question how it would look to put James Harden with them. And to me, I think the Nets have the perfect amount of depth and honestly the perfect roster right now. I think that they risk, you know, whiffing on their potential if they bring in Harden. I don't think that it's the right fit. I don't think it's what they need. And based off of Kevin Durant's comments into the media, I don't think that one's happening. 76ers. The problem with the 76ers is that the Rockets want Ben Simmons. But in the offseason, the 76ers got more shooters so that the team better suits Ben Simmons. And I even said last week, Ben Simmons could be a breakout MVP candidate because he's probably going to have his best year ever because of the way they've restructured the roster around him. And so to just decide, oh, we're going to give up on that, that's a big ask. I don't think it's worth it for them. Then you've got the Heat. Okay, the Heat made it to the finals and were 2 games away from a title with a bunch of super young guys. And so a lot of people are now saying, oh, well, those young guys now have a ton of trade value because they impressed everybody. You could bring in Harden, pair him with Jimmy Butler and Bam. But the way I see it is, if they were that successful as rookies and sophomores, you know, another year in the NBA, their ceiling is going to go up. And if they don't change anything, they're going to get better. How many teams can say that? You know, how many contenders can say that if we don't change anything, we're going to get better simply because our guys are that inexperienced? I think the Heat don't have any pressure to change anything. And I think that they've got a system and they love playing with each other. The only major loss they had was Jay Crowder, which I do think is a bigger loss than people give credit for. But no, the Heat don't need to change anything. So it makes you kind of wonder, if none of those three teams should trade for Harden, well, shoot, is James Harden just going to keep whining and being a baby all season? And is the Rockets just going to, you know, is their season just going to completely fall apart and be this horrible train wreck all season long? No, I don't think so. I think there is a team that can give a package for Harden that should trade for Harden based off of their timeline and their success. And that team is the Golden State Warriors. Okay, first of all, what could they offer? I think the Golden State Warriors should give the Rockets Andrew Wiggins, James Wiseman, who was the number 2 pick in the draft,
and the Timberwolves' first pick for next year, as well as, you know, potentially a few other Warriors picks. So those are all marketable assets that people will want. Those are all things that, okay, Wiggins has some upside still. Wiseman has a ton of potential. And the Wolves pick next season is going to be good because the Wolves aren't going to be good. And so the Warriors have those assets, and it doesn't make sense for them to keep them. I was surprised that the Warriors didn't make a draft night trade and that they actually used their pick to take Wiseman, because the thing about the Warriors is this. They are a contender as long as they have Steph Curry. When you've got a guy who's genuinely top five in the league, you're going to be a contender as long as you have him. And so, truly, they've got a few more years of being a contender. And once Steph Harden starts to get older, isn't able to carry that same load, their window is closed. And so I think the pressure is on the Warriors to win now. Are they really going to have the patience for this 19-year-old big man, James Wiseman, who kind of has had some injury issues? Do they really have the patience for someone like Wiggins, who is looking better right now but just doesn't quite fit the Warriors' MO? The Warriors are all about ball movement. Wiggins, it is not all about ball movement. He needs to pass more. Are they really going to have the patience to deal with, you know, developing whatever asset they could get with that Wolves pick? No. Clearly, all three of these people, you know, Wiggins, Wiseman, and the mystery pick next year, these people are better used to make a trade. Okay? Harden. How does Harden fit in with the Warriors? Well, the Warriors are all about ball movement. They're all about shooting threes. I mean, these are the things they're iconic for, right? Harden, you know, for all of his flaws, I do think he's an underrated playmaker. And obviously, everyone knows how good of a three-point shooter he is. Harden and Curry alongside each other, with Kelly Oubre alongside them and Draymond alongside them, that's a championship roster. And then next year, when Harden's still under contract, they get Klay back. That's honestly, now they're back to dynasty level, truly. I think that that's the sort of thing that the Warriors need to do if they want to get a few more championships out of Steph Curry and Draymond and this great dynasty that they've built. And so I know that that trade package isn't necessarily as good as what the Nets, 76ers, and Heat could offer on paper. But people need to stop thinking about what works on paper. You got to think, these teams don't want to give up all that shit. They want their own success that they've built. They all have a plan. Whereas the Warriors, you know, they've been dealing with a lot of injuries and a lot of shit that, you know, they couldn't have necessarily planned on dealing with. And right now, their roster looks like a complete hodgepodge to me. And everyone's saying, oh yeah, they're good enough to get the seventh seed in the West, probably lose in the first round. You're really going to waste one of your last years of Curry's prime on a seventh seed in the West and to lose in the first round? Fuck that, okay? Wiggins, if he's looking better right now, a lot of people are saying, oh, maybe he'll be good enough. No, take this second that Wiggins doesn't look like total trash, and this is the highest his trade value will ever be. Capitalize on that. And so the Warriors trade all their assets, get Harden, and become title favorites for next season and maybe even this season. They become, honestly, I'd say we'd see them in the Western Conference Finals with the Lakers if they made this trade. They need to make this trade. Question number two. What's up with that Giannis Antetokounmpo contract? All right. So this is one of the biggest stories of this week. Giannis Antetokounmpo, reigning two-time MVP and Defensive Player of the Year, recently signed the biggest contract in NBA history. And this has been a kind of controversial signing. A lot of people have different opinions on how good of a decision that was, because Giannis, basically, it's 5 years, $228 million. And a lot of people say, okay, so now he's chained down to the Bucks for a while, and a lot of people don't see the Bucks as able to win. Okay, well, first of all, shut the fuck up, okay? If you're hating on this contract, I think you just need to just shut the fuck up, okay? Let's go through all the reasons that this contract is fucking awesome and one of my favorite stories of the year so far. Okay? First of all, it's so heartwarming. It's such a success story to know that Giannis, I mean, say what you will about him on the court. Once you're a superstar, you get a lot of critiques, and so a lot of people have a lot of shit to say about him. I think he's great on the court, but nobody can deny that off the court, this dude is a total sweetheart. He loves his family. He cares so much about his family. And to know how poor he grew up in Greece, he and his brothers, who are now also in the NBA, they would share shoes so that they would all get to play. They would take turns with the pair of shoes they could afford. And now he just signed the most lucrative contract in NBA history, one of the most lucrative contracts in sports history. And, I mean, that is just amazing, and he's earned it. And the crazy thing is, I think he is still getting better. And so right now, you know, nobody deserves this contract more than him, I guess is what I'm saying. He is still getting better every year. You don't get to where he is without an amazing growth mindset, which is honestly one of his biggest strengths, is that he's always trying to get better. I mean, he's a former most improved player. He's the first most improved player winner to win an MVP, let alone win two and a defensive player of the year. I mean, Jesus Christ. And the fact that he's so young and, you know, his shot's going to get better. He is going to continue to grow. And so I think the better he gets, the better the Bucks championship odds get. Okay. And so the follow-up question, I won't make this its own question for the show. But the follow-up question, of course, is: are the Bucks going to win a championship? You know, because if they're not, everyone's going to think, okay, well now they're wasting money on him, and he's wasting his prime with them. I think they can. I think they can, and I honestly think they will. Chris Middleton, people have critiques of him. People forget that Chris Middleton is putting up numbers that, like, who's put up numbers as good as him? Larry Bird. I mean, as a second option, what do you need? For a guy like Giannis, the best second option you could get for him is that kind of, you know, 3-and-D guy. Someone who can be really efficient shooting and play some good defense on the other end, right? I think Chris Middleton fits that bill. He is a very underrated player, and he can absolutely be the second best player on a contender, I think. And so add on top of that that you've got Drew Holiday, who is a great fit, and it sounds like they love having him, and he loves being there. And he's kind of gone through the cycle of being underrated to being overrated to now I think he's back to being underrated again. And so, like, truly, people sleep on these guys and act like they can't contribute to Giannis's and the team's success, and I think it's all a bunch of baloney. I think that they're going to do great. So the roster, I think, is fine, especially with Giannis still getting better. The issue to me is Mike Budenholzer. I mean, he's given this team all that he can. He built this system and roster around Giannis so that Giannis can truly be as efficient as he can. I think that someone like Ben Simmons, if he had a roster around him like Giannis, would be doing a lot better. I don't think Giannis wins MVP without Mike Budenholzer's system around him. And so, obviously, I think the coach gets a lot of credit, but the issue with Mike Budenholzer is that he does not make adjustments in the playoffs. I think he's a very good regular season coach. He's very good at developing a system, and then I think that does well in the regular season when you just kind of put up the same system a bunch of times. You know, you're not making as many adjustments against teams. You don't have as much time to plan against each team, right? But then you get to the playoffs, you got to make adjustments. You got to plan against a specific team, and people are exploiting the Bucks and beating them. You know, the Heat knew how to beat the Bucks. They had their number. Could the Bucks have beaten the Heat? Maybe if they had a coach that made some adjustments and knew how to beat the Heat and had their number. I think the playoffs, people start to blame the superstars. They say, ooh, Giannis choked. Ooh, Paul George choked. No, 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 no. Coaching in the playoffs becomes more important than the regular season because the coach has got to fucking make adjustments. And Budenholzer, if you don't do that, kiss your job goodbye. The way I see it, if they don't win a championship this year, his ass is gone. He's given them all that he can, and honestly, they're going to continue to benefit from his system because it's already in place. So yeah, Budenholzer, no chip, no job. So clock's ticking. Question number three. How were the GM's takes in the annual GM survey? Okay, so this week the GM survey dropped. Basically, every year, all 30 general managers in the NBA do a survey where they answer a bunch of questions about what they think is going to happen throughout the season, who their favorite players are, shit like that. And so this year, okay, I have mixed feelings about their takes. So let's go through some of the highlights. Okay, first of all, Lakers, they have as the strong favorites. Okay, fine. I agree. I agree with that. The Lakers, I think, as competitive as the league was last year, they were pretty clear favorites. And I think that they've gotten even better. They've gotten deeper, at least. And so I think no doubt to me that the Lakers are the favorites. I like the field a lot, and I like a lot of the other teams here. But they're the favorites for sure. They've got the LA Clippers as the second choice, though. And if you listen to me week to week, you know, I don't think the Clippers are making it out of the first round this year unless they make another midseason trade. I think the formulas for playoff success include good coaching, having a superstar, which they have, obviously, superstar talent, but then playmaking as well. I think that's what the Clippers are missing. I think that's a part of postseason success, just as a general formula. And so I think the Clippers lack that, and I don't see them as 11% of GMs think that they're the favorites to win. Jesus Christ. I should have your job, dumbass. I also notice here that for the favorites, nobody voted for the Bucks. Okay. Great. Yeah, keep sleeping on them, idiots. The Bucks are awesome. So, regardless, they do have, the GMs did vote for the Bucks to be at the top of the East. So I guess they just think the Bucks are going to lose in the finals, which, I mean, that's not a horrible take because the Lakers probably could still beat them. But the Bucks, I think, have a good chance this year. And I'm surprised that no GMs think so. You know, you'd think that GMs wouldn't get caught up on the bandwagon as much as, like, idiot fans. and yet they're still just falling on this bandwagon against the Bucks and forgetting how good the Bucks are. It's kind of ridiculous. One thing I noticed here on the survey is that every question about coaches, they were like, Eric Spoelstra, best coach, best manager, best motivator, best in-game adjustments. Okay. I'd think that GMs wouldn't overreact to the playoffs as much. I think a lot of people are really on the Eric Spoelstra bandwagon right now because of how well Miami did last season. And, okay, not to say that he's not a great coach, because he is. But, like, I mean, you know, Greg Popovich is still in the league, you know. He may have missed his playoff streak last season. But, again, you know, that's just recency bias. Okay, so the Miami Heat went on this great run. Greg Popovich didn't have a great roster. And now we're going to say that Eric Spoelstra is a better coach than Greg Popovich. Jesus Christ. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I mean, I'm glad to see Spo getting some respect because he is a great coach. And I think, you know, so a lot of people voted for Nick Nurse and Brad Stevens. And it's like, yeah, okay, maybe I understand Eric Spoelstra being up there. I think people forget how good of a coach Steve Kerr is. And we might see a little bit more of that this season. Truly, you know, teams that didn't get the bubble boost are going to have hurt reputations. You know, if you didn't get invited to the bubble because your team wasn't good last season, people are going to forget how good you were. Because it's been a while since we saw you. Another thing I noticed is best relocated or new head coach that will make the biggest impact on their team. They say Steve Nash is going to have the biggest impact on Brooklyn. Well, just recently, Kyrie Irving even said, like, I don't imagine us as having a head coach. I think we're all just a bunch of guys. And, like, I mean, it's his first time ever coaching. I do think former point guards are going to make good head coaches. I think Steve Nash is obviously, you know, smart guy, good guy. but I don't know if he's going to make the biggest impact. I mean, truly, the Nets are a playoff team without two superstars, and now they've got two superstars in Kyrie and Kevin Durant. They were a playoff team without them. So it's like, is Steve Nash going to get a lot of credit for their success this season? Maybe. Does he deserve it? I don't know. They would be one of the best teams in the East if I was coaching them. You know, like they are just that good. So, I mean, to me, seeing that Nate Bjorkgren doesn't even have a single vote here kind of pisses me off. Like, Tom Thibodeau is really going to have an impact on New York. He doesn't know how to develop players. He was a horrible signing. Tyronn Lue for the LA Clippers, he was already an assistant coach for them. What the fuck is he going to do? Doc Rivers on Philadelphia? How many times does Doc Rivers have to blow a 3-1 lead in the playoffs before we just admit that he's an overhyped coach? Like, I think Nate Bjorkgren has a reputation as someone who comes in and helps guys get better. And he's working with a Pacers roster that is underrated, which I've talked about before. And I think that he is going to come in and be great. I really am shocked to see that his name didn't even get a single vote among GMs. So the other main thing I notice along this whole list is that basically at every opportunity, they're pretty much chugging Luka and Giannis's dongs on here. They've got them as the top two MVP finishers. They've got them as the best young guys, the guys that you'd build a team around, you know, all that. The best at their positions, whatever, right? I just personally, I mean, if you were going to start an NBA franchise with any one person, yes, it should be one of them. That's like truly like correct versus incorrect answer. Like, if you don't say Luka or Giannis to start your franchise around, that's just fucking wrong. And best international player, yeah, it's one of them. And Jokic is good too. But for MVP this season, I've already said Giannis is not going to get it a third time in a row. Not because he doesn't deserve it, but because they're not going to give it to someone three times in a row. Luka, I don't think, is going to win it, but I could be wrong. A lot of people think he's the favorite. I just don't see it because I think the Mavs aren't going to have the team success. And again, I've talked about this before, but I don't see either of them as winning MVP this year. I see both of them as having at least one. Like, Luka's going to win at least one MVP, and I think Giannis could win at least one more because, like I've said today, he's going to get better. But I mean, Jesus. And then the next two options they've got as MVP are AD and LeBron, who I don't see either of them as winning MVP as long as they're together, just because I don't think there's a lot of pressure on either of them to put up MVP numbers, especially with how good their bench has gotten and how much the Lakers want to protect them from injury. So, and then they've got Kevin Durant with 7%. Okay. Yeah, he's looking good out there. He is. Preseason has come out. And I've said before preseason, I've said a lot about how KD, who knows how he's going to look after injury. Okay, he looks good, fine. But 7% chance of winning MVP, I don't see it. I mean, Jokic is the sixth place for who's going to win MVP on the GM survey with 4%. And that is, in my opinion, the first great choice they have on there. I mean, Luka's a decent choice. So Luka and Jokic are like decent choices. But shit, I would love to see Steph or Dame on this top six here, just because I think their chances of winning MVP are really underrated. I will say not seeing Harden on there makes sense because of his public meltdown and his team falling apart. And so I'm glad to see that at least. Although they did still say he was going to lead in scoring, I think, which makes sense. So yeah, overall, I'd say that the GM survey was, I don't know, a little bit disappointing. I would have expected to see some takes in there that are a little bit, I guess, just less mainstream and less bandwagon-y. You'd think that the GMs would have like a lot of wisdom and a lot of takes that are maybe more surprising, but instead they were just like, we watch the playoffs too. You know. Question number 4. Who were the best players to watch of the preseason so far? Okay, so this is being recorded a few days before the season starts, so there's still more preseason to go. But I wanted to talk about individual players that have impressed in the preseason. I'm not going to talk about team performances because, to me, different teams tinker in different ways during the preseason, right? So some of them are going to try to put their guys out there and test their starting lineups, try a few different things, and their stars are going to get more minutes, and they're going to blow past teams that maybe really want to, you know, try to hash out their bench rotation and give everyone on the squad some minutes and see, okay, well, who's really thriving out there and who thrives alongside who. And so, like, if a team's putting its five starters against a team that's putting out its bench, you know, I don't care how good either team is, you know, the one that puts out its starters is going to have an advantage. And so team performances are useless to judge here. But a few players that are highlights here. I mean, Talen Horton-Tucker, you've heard plenty about. He was picked 46th overall last year. Barely got any minutes with the Lakers. I mean, he's a young guy. He was born this century, which is, you know, that's a young fella, okay? And now he's just dropping 30 left and right. Just like you know, oh, LeBron who, AD who? I'm the star of this team. Good for him, you know? Talen Horton-Tucker reminds me of, like, if you're playing 2K and you draft a dude with A-plus potential and then forget about him. And then, like, a season or two later, you're like, how'd this 93 overall get on my team? Like, who is this? Like, that's Talen Horton-Tucker to me. Is, like, the rich get richer, I guess, right? Maybe it's just the benefit of playing with such great players and playing on a championship team in his first year. But, like, he has blossomed. And that said, I feel like it's less likely that he's going to be a new star for the Lakers. And honestly, more likely that he might end up being a trade piece with how much buzz he's getting. I don't know. We'll see. LaMelo Ball, I think in his first game as a point guard, he got 10 rebounds and 0 points, which is, if you show me that stat line and had me guess who it was, I would have said Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman put up stat lines like that all the time, where he would just, like, not even shoot the ball at all and just get, like, 30 rebounds, you know? And so to have that stat line get dropped by a point guard is crazy. And then he's splashing threes in his next couple of games. And it's just, he's such an interesting player. Like, you know, his stat lines are looking better and better each game he plays, and his passes are just fun to watch. I just think overall he's interesting. And I think that's a reason that he's getting a lot of buzz right now. And then another one, these are all buzzy answers. And so I feel like I'm not being, you know, these aren't hot takes right now. This is just, like, stuff that I think is fun, that everyone else thinks is fun. But, you know, if we all agree, we must be right, I guess. I don't know. John Wall, seeing John Wall again, I have always liked John Wall, and it really hurt me deep within my heart to see him get hurt so many times. And so to have John Wall back, and even if he's playing for the Rockets, just to have him back and playing is just so nice. And Boogie Cousins alongside him too. It's like, it's just like, it's a triumphant, like, we miss these boys. We miss these boys bad. And here they are. And they're doing fine, you know? It just is like a total feel-good moment to see them just even suit up at all. Another one, I feel like people aren't surprised at Zach LaVine's stats because he always puts up decent stats, but just the fact that he was putting up good stats throughout the preseason, and I don't know, I'm just going to say it now, and I know this is probably my least buzzy answer of all, but, like, Zach LaVine is going to be an all-star for the first time this year, and I see no reason that that would change based off preseason. Obviously, you know, you can't judge too much off preseason, but he's looking good out there, and he's going to be an all-star for the first time. Bet on it, bitch. Question 5. Who is winning Rookie of the Year? Okay, so I didn't know what to put for the 5th question, so I kind of wanted to keep with my trend that I started last week of giving a too early guess with too little context. And now that we've seen these rookies play a bit in the preseason, I think I can say a bit more about who's going to win Rookie of the Year. And just like with my MVP predictions, I'm factoring in hype and storylines and all of that. I'm not even necessarily, you know, saying what's going to be most deserved. But I think one person that was getting a lot of buzz to win Rookie of the Year was Obi Toppin, because a lot of people said he's a little older than the other guys in the draft. He led everyone in scoring. He looked great. He's a little more developed than the other rookies, but he's probably not going to improve as much as them. And so he might win Rookie of the Year, but he's not going to have the best career out of everyone in the class. That was basically the narrative around Obi Toppin. But now he's sitting behind Julius Randle in the rotation in New York, and he fucking should, because Julius Randle is looking a lot better out there. And so I think all that Obi Toppin hype is kind of muted. And I think, again, it should be. He is going to have time to adjust, and he is going to be good out there. Don't get me wrong. Okay? But to see that there were rookies on other shitty teams that were basically handed the keys, and then to see on the Knicks, it's like, oh, we have Julius Randle. I think from the Knicks' perspective, that's good. Oh, we already have a starter in your position, so we can be a little more patient with you, Obi Toppin. Take your time, and then eventually you can take that starting spot. I think that's good from their perspective. But for in terms of individual narrative, you know, I think there are plenty of rookies that the team just completely depends on. And that's the sort of person that I see as having a really great shot at Rookie of the Year, the person that's going to put up the best numbers, right? Like, even Anthony Edwards, too. Right now, I just don't see him as a huge Rookie of the Year candidate. I mean, maybe. He is scoring well for the Wolves, but the issue is that the Wolves kind of have a heavy wing rotation right now, and I think they're going to do the same thing. They're going to give him a little time to develop, and they're not going to lean on him too heavily to be their star guy. And so I'd say narrative-wise, even though this is going to be a tight race statistically, I say LaMelo is already getting so much buzz, and he's already improved among three preseason games. His stats aren't going to be the best among rookies, but I feel like if he's able to even just like lead them in assists or something, right? Or like if he even has just one stat that he can cling to, I think people will champion that one stat and be like, oh, it's LaMelo. Kind of like when everyone was like, LeBron should win MVP last year. It's like, he led everyone in assists. And it's like, okay, well, Giannis is better than him in this. And everyone was like, but he's old. You know, it's like people just want to cling to one or two things for narrative reasons. And so in this case, I think LaMelo doesn't need to have the best stats of all the rookies. He just needs to have one best stat of all the rookies, and it's his. I mean, the hype is too big. He's so fun to watch. And again, he's being handed the keys to a garbage team, and they're basically saying, save us, help us. And he's saying, okay. I will add a caveat, though, that because he's probably not going to have the best overall stats, I could see him winning Rookie of the Year and then having at least one other rookie have kind of that Donovan Mitchell from a few years ago bitterness, like Anthony Edwards, like Precious, or Denny. Like, these guys are all looking great, and so are others, but like, I think there's going to be a few rookies this season, because there isn't like a clear front runner. I think there's going to be at least a few that get really bitter and toxic towards whoever steals Rookie of the Year from their guy this season. So we have that to look forward to. If you're a fan that likes to get angry about shit, there's a tip for you. Get angry about whoever doesn't win Rookie of the Year, because there's going to be someone that could deserve it that doesn't get it. There's just a lot of good rookies here, and none of them are like seemingly transcendent enough to be a runaway candidate at this time. At this time, if I'm guessing. Like, anyone that I mentioned by name is like good and gonna be good and gonna contribute. So yeah, if I had to pick now, just based off of how fun they are to watch and narrative and the fact that they're being depended on for their team, I'd say LaMelo. And that is all for this week's episode of the Hoops But Edgy podcast. I just realized that I didn't think of an end tagline like I said I was gonna. But what I do know is that my Twitter is at JimWearsShirts. And if you have questions you want me to answer, please tweet them at me and I will consider them. And so man, I really need that end line to end on. Enjoy the hoops, guys. Okay, yeah, that's good. That's fine.